The future of wearable tech, and more, coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey, Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and, well, a sneak peek at some of today's articles that we'll be looking at today. Obviously, our feature story coming to us courtesy of Bloomberg, future of wearable tech. We'll also be looking at Facebook really doesn't seem to understand privacy or security. Digging a little bit into that. We'll be looking at how Dungeons & Dragons somehow became more popular than ever. You might find it interesting, and I got some interesting tidbits to share about that. We'll be looking at new Xbox and PlayStation hardware hinting at the future of gaming, albeit a couple of years late, maybe a decade, pushing it. We'll be looking at, well, Instagram hiding like counts in leaked design prototype. We'll also be looking at Overwatch players discovering some secrets on a new Havana map. And we'll be looking at a new game called The Whispers of a Machine. Not my review, but it's an interesting game, and I figured I'd might as well shine a little bit of a spotlight on it. So, before we can get into that, we always have to take a look at, our Did You Know Tech facts and this day in tech history. So, let's get started, shall we? I see we're going to have to deal with that graphic a little bit longer. For those of you listening to the audio version of this, you're like, what's going on? Well, we got a video version of this show over at YouTube and Facebook for those of you who want to watch the video of it, but I still haven't gotten the trivia transition upgraded to Did You Know? So, working on that. We'll be bringing trivia back from time to time, but it might just be for different kind of events, because I know as much as you guys like trivia and learning about new stuff, not much interaction goes on there, so I'm trying to figure out how to best to sort it in. But anyways, did you know, for episode number 102, did you know that the first ever VCR was made in 1956 and was the size of a piano? Glad we didn't have to lug that around moving from house to house. Hey, honey, grab the VCR. Hey, can you get Uncle Roy in here to help move it? Oh, my goodness. And also, did you know that in general, people tend to read as much as 10% slower from a screen than from paper? Ironic, right? I mean, one would think maybe the reason why we're spending so much dang time on our phones and tablets and laptops and computers and everything else is because 10% of it's trying to figure out what the heck we're reading. You ever occur to you, go out and buy a book? I read books. As a matter of fact, right behind this camera, I have a whole bookshelf that's stock full of books. Matter of fact, I think I need to upgrade that into a bigger bookshelf. Yeah, for those of you who don't know me all that much, I love reading books. It's essentially how I self-taught myself a lot of what I know about the internet outside of me breaking things on the internet, albeit my first website and every experiment that I've done behind the scene that I don't really talk about much or anything that I've really done. I've kind of learned from a book. For me, that's how I learn. For some of you, you might learn best by, you know, getting your hands dirty. And some of you might learn better by listening to somebody else explain it to you or showing you or giving you like a walkthrough or tutorial of sorts. For me, I can read a book, get it pretty good, and then go out and tinker with stuff. Quite honestly, my dad said that, if I grew up back in the era when cars and tech was basically all there is, I probably would have been a gearhead. And I probably kind of am to a certain extent, but I'm more of like a nerd or a geek of sorts, which I guess benefits our family because whenever something breaks computer-wise in the house, I'm usually the first one they call. So, it's kind of a running joke. So, moving on. All right. Today in tech history, we always like to take a look back just to see what happened in the past and any relation might have to events going on today, currently, and I'm so glad to report that my computer is doing better. We're not getting overloader encoder error messages, so I'll continue on and consider that everything's operating well and smoothly here. So, being that today is April 18th, 2019, on this day in 1983, the Osborne Executive was introduced. the Osborne Computer Corporation officially announced the Osborne Executive Portable Computer. granted, it probably weighed like 35, 40 pounds at the time. The follow-up to its extremely successful Osborne 1. This is a computer that, according to lore, took down the company. Known as the Osborne Effect, the legend is that by leaking the announcement of this computer earlier in the year, dealers canceled all the orders for the Osborne 1, effectively destroying the company's cash flow and hindering operations going forward. This resulted in the cancellation of the company's IPO and eventually led to bankruptcy. In reality, it might not be so simple, but research shows that the Osborne Effect may have been a contributing cause to the company's demise, along with the rise of competitors, the introduction of the IBM PC, and mismanagement by the company's president, brought in by investors to provide, quote, adult supervision, because apparently this technology was too far flung, you know, for you young punks to know what the heck's going on, so we need to get an adult in here. So, there you go. There. Also, on this day in 1986, IBM became the first to use the megabit chip. Newspapers report that IBM had become the first computer manufacturer to use a megabit chip, a memory chip capable of storing 1 million bits of information in a commercial product, its model 3090. The announcement is heralded as a notable triumph for American computer makers whose work had been perceived as having fallen behind that of the Japanese electronics industry. But little did we know then at the time that later on they'd come to smack our behinds with all the consoles and electronics and handheld devices and gaming. That's technically why we look to Japan for innovations when it comes to that realm of technology, although, you know, could change at any time if the people here in America get their butts in order. Anyways, let's head on over to the news of today, shall we? Yeah, what's the button? What's the button I pressed for that? Okay, hang on. Let's give me a second. Hang on, guys. All right, I just had to hide something really quick. I was like, oh no, I can't do that. So, the future of wearable tech. What do you think that might be? Glasses, maybe. Something put on your ear, maybe, wrist, watch, maybe, I don't know. Could be a combination of all three, but a couple of companies, notably very, very few of them, are saying that it could be a hearing aid. Now, this was brought to my attention earlier today. A reader wrote in via email, and he said, any information on when and where these Mars earbuds will be available for sale? Thanks. Apparently, last year we had covered the Mars Earbuds simultaneous person-to-person translation winning big at CES 2018. We had heard then that the rumor was they'll be unveiling it more in terms of pricing and when it'll be out to order near the end of 2018. Haven't heard anything yet. No clue what's going on. All we know is that companies throw out these great ideas. Keep in mind, at CES, a lot of companies use CES as the platform to gauge kind of the market reply, and if they don't get the reply they want, they'll usually just go, I don't think we'll do that. But if it's something that they want and are actually in production to do it, you can guarantee that it'll, well, especially for the bigger companies, you can guarantee that it'll be coming out in short order. So, not to mention that some things unveiled at certain events don't really wind up to be what they are promised to be, but, well, might be just a hearing aid, and we'll be taking a look here really quick. We won't be going through this whole article. We'll be looking at a couple of the highlights. So when Brandon Swalich started Starkey Hearing Technologies in suburban Minneapolis, he was 19, and there were about 70 companies worldwide making hearing aids. Now, if you're like, Taylor, what are you talking about hearing aids for? Well, just listen. You might glean some interesting information off of this. That was back in 1994. His job was to clean the ones mailed in for repair or occasionally as returns because the user was then no longer needed them. Today, Swalich is 43. There are 5 companies, and he's president of Starkey, which employs 6,000 people and sold 800 million in hearing aids last year. We've been right here in Eden Prairie since 1974, he says, as I guess the author is getting a tour of the company headquarters, then corrects himself. Technically, it started a few years before that in the basement of Mr. Austin's home. It's one of those great entrepreneurial American success stories. Swatch moved from a waxy build to events to sales to finally president, the company's top position, which he assumed in 2016 in the wake of a fraud scandal that rocked Starkey. He's also stepson of the aforementioned Mr. Austin, the William Austin, billionaire company founder who built Starkey into a privately held Goliath and has made hearing aids for seemingly every famous person who requires them, including four U.S. presidents, two popes, Nelson Mandela, and Mother Teresa. Starkey is now the only one of the surviving Big Five manufacturers based in the U.S. What's thinned the herd of competitors, he says, is technology. Hearing aids used to be relatively simple, inexpensive to make, and not hugely different from brand to brand. Today, they're an increasingly complex digital product requiring teams of engineers and a robust investment in research and development. A thin, barely visible wire curls over the top of each of his ears and vanishes into the canals where an earpiece the size of a marker tip delivers sound. These are real, he says. I do have some minor hearing loss. And he says it's from loud music and shooting guns in his youth. He's also wearing these thin, barely visible aids because they're the company's latest and greatest development. The reason 300 of America's top audiologists will arrive in 2 days' time at this building via red carpet while stunning a gauntlet of whooping and clapping employees. So what's interesting about that, Swatch is fond of saying that Starkey makes a product that nobody wants. Almost two-thirds of the people in America who need hearing aids don't have them, and those who do accept their fate and wait an average of 7 years from the first symptom before seeking help. With these, hearing aids are going to evolve, he says, so that you don't have to have hearing loss to want a hearing aid. Now you heard, correction, well, read, or heard, or watched that correctly. Starkey is now pitching the world a hearing aid for people who don't need hearing aids. Swatch pulls out an iPhone of his jacket pocket and opens an app called Thrive, built to accompany this paradigm shift of a product. The Livio AI, as this new device is called, uses tiny sensors plus, as its name suggests, artificial intelligence to selectively filter noise and focus on specific sound sources. For instance, the person across the table in a busy restaurant, while also tracking various health metrics, including steps walked, stairs climbed, and cognitive activity, such as how much the wearer is talking and engaging with other humans. It also does near instantaneous translation of 27 languages and will, after a forthcoming update, measure heart rate. When did you add that to hearing aids? The cost level is, well, pretty interesting. $2,500 to $3,000 per hearing aid or more, depending on the doctor and his or her services. In the next 5 to 7 years, your hearing aids are going to be like Jarvis from Iron Man. Swatch says it's going to be your personal assistant. It's going to know more about what's going on with your body than you want to know. Your heart rate, blood pressure, glucose, the ear is the new wrist. Now, obviously, keep in mind that's company speak and PR stunt, but kind of interesting to think about. I mean, here we thought this whole entire time, oh, maybe it's going to be Google Glass, and Google went, oh, can't do it, and threw it out, or did they, I don't know, trying to figure out. It's coming back. It's kind of in a weird way, but then the watch, the wristwatch, caught on pretty quick. Get it? Now it's just hanging out, and people are like, well, what else can you do with it? And you're like, well, you could do this. This. Meanwhile, hearing aids just decided to go, hey guys, check this out. Even though we didn't need to do anything about it, poof, here you go. So, Tom, if you're listening or watching to the show, you might just have your answer right here. The Mars earbuds might have just been a prototype idea, although it had the backing of some pretty interesting companies, but we haven't heard anything about it. But this is the Livio AI. Kind of interesting product. Looks like it's actually got a price tag to it. Update coming to it. Everything rolling out soon, and this is an American company. So, we might just get exactly what we wanted, although from a different company. So, let's see. It just goes on to talk more about the company, more about touring of what's going on, molded ears used for testing. So yeah, if you guys want to read the rest of the article, I'll have this as well as the rest of the articles that we're covering today in the show notes that you can find over at technewsgadget.net/102. Or if you're listening in a podcast app of your choice right now, you should just be able to swipe or slide or click for more well, tap for more details, and you'll have the article links right at your leisure. So, enjoy. Oh, and don't forget to let me know what your thoughts are on that, or any of the other articles that we talk about today in the comment section down below. Always love reading your comments and emails and tweets, so keep those coming. Moving on to our next story. Well, Facebook really doesn't seem to understand privacy or security. Well, you're probably thinking, what happened this time, Taylor? Well, they're having a bad day. Again, how bad? Well, think tens of millions of Instagram passwords exposed for anyone to see. You know, weren't these people just like on Capitol Hill like earlier last year? You know, talking about how they're all about security and privacy and all that stuff, and we keep finding them doing stupid stuff. Meanwhile, anyways, Facebook already maligned reputation privacy protection took just two more critical hits. Today, the social network said it found millions of Instagram passwords had been stored in plain text, an insecure format that would allow the tech giant's employees to read them if they wanted to. The new figure is orders of magnitude greater than an initial estimate of tens of thousands of unsecured passwords that was revealed in March. The news, which was overshadowed, I think I might have covered that article too. The news, which was overshadowed but not obscured by the release of the Mueller report, which nobody really wants to hear about. Who cares about politics? This is a tech show. Followed an article saying that Facebook, Instagram's parent company, had unintentionally harvested the email contacts of about 1.5 million of its users over the past 3 years. The activity was discovered when a security researcher noticed Facebook asking users to enter their email passwords to identify verify their identities when signing up for accounts, according to Business Insider, which previously reported on the practice. Those who entered their passwords saw a pop-up message saying Facebook was importing their contacts, even though the service hadn't asked permission. So Facebook acknowledged both lapses. We'll be notifying these users as we did the others. Our investigation has determined that these stored passwords were not internally abused or improperly accessed. Facebook typically hashes and encrypts passwords so that even its own employees can't see them. That helps ensure that user passwords are protected. So guys, can you just, oh, for crying out loud here, we just keep going over this again and again and again and again. We should be expecting some hiccups from time to time, but not so many so close together. Can you guys figure out what's going on and kind of not driving us crazy? Because you keep this up, and users who are on your platform more and more will start leaving and going elsewhere. It's just the nature of the beast. So if you don't want to be caught with your hand in the cookie jar, can you stop punching the cookies in the cookie jar to begin with? Gosh. Moving on to our next article. Well, this is kind of interesting. How Dungeons & Dragons somehow became more popular than ever. Now, I'm not just highlighting Dungeons & Dragons, although it's kind of interesting that they decided to pick this game. So the author starts out, there was something about Dungeons & Dragons that spoke to Mario in a deep way. He tried it for the first time 5 years ago. Never mind that he wasn't a teen as most newbies are, but an adult. While experiencing the role-playing game, he could imagine scenes down to the tiniest detail. The bump of cobblestones on a street, the smell of baked goods in a market, the coldness of the wind, the boredom in his life magically melted away. He joined one regular group, then two, then four. Soon he was leading games as a dungeon master at his local game store. Mario, who is 31 and works full-time as a caregiver, quickly found his entire non-working life overtaken by elves, gnomes, dwarves, and wizards. If you asked me to add up how many hours I spend thinking about Dungeons & Dragons, I'd be too embarrassed to answer. He says his only regret, that he didn't start playing it sooner. Yes, apparently the game is back. It's cool now, sort of, and legions are into it, including an unprecedented number of adult and female players attracted by a popular recent revamp and new online playing options. It's the ultimate sign that nerd culture is now mainstream. But Vin Diesel, Jon Favreau, Drew Barrymore, Dwayne Johnson, James Franco, Stephen Colbert, Anderson Cooper, and more are all celebrities who have come out about rolling the 20-sided dice. Albeit as long as a wizard's beard now by this point, Game of Thrones writer George R.R. Martin first flexed his storytelling muscles as a young dungeon master, as did the showrunners on the HBO series. The game has been on TV shows including Big Bang Theory and Futurama. Next month, we'll see a release of a Stranger Things tie-in D&D starter set. Now, keep in mind, this is a game that's been around for 45 years, guys, but in 2018, its developers, Wizards of the Coast, sold more units than ever before. If you told me that a game that has a 328-page rulebook would have grown to the size it's grown in the past 5 years, I wouldn't have believed it, says Mike Merles, the game's lead developer. How in the world of computers and video games and mobile games does this stand out? Well, essentially, the game itself is collaborative storytelling. Players pretend to be fantasy characters who embark on a group adventure. They battle monsters, explore terrain, and roll the dice to decide outcome. And a dungeon master guides the narrative. Now, it's come a long way since its invention in 1974 as an alternative to miniature military war gaming. No longer is it a game to hide out with in mom's basement. Ironically, as a matter of fact, if you probably go to a lot of Renaissance fairs all over the country in the U.S., you'll probably find that board game stuffed away somewhere waiting for you to buy it. It's kind of interesting. But get this, it gets even more interesting. Today, people play it at a bar and restaurant pop-up events such as Drinks and Dragons in Philadelphia and Orcs in Portland, Oregon. They pay, get this, $2,650 per person per weekend to play it in a Caverswall castle in Staffordshire, England. They swell the ranks of the D&D meetup groups from Tokyo 37 members to Kolkata, India, which has 501 members. So, this is kind of interesting, and the reason why I mention it is because over this past weekend here where I live in Milwaukee, there was a Midwest Gaming Convention, and people from all over the world probably, I don't know, I didn't go, descended on here to take a look at, you know, all the new board games and everything else. This was Midwest tabletop game. It was no video games. All of this was board games and very much retro games going on, arcade style games. So very, very interesting. Not to mention that on Twitch and I believe Mixer and on several other live stream platforms, there's a category specifically called like tabletop gaming where you'll actually watch people playing board games. And it's interesting because some of the larger people, larger streamers, independent on if it's an individual or a group or a company, will have multiple camera angles, like an overhead view and then like a per person view. They really get into this kind of stuff, and all they're literally doing is the four of them, five of them, two of them are sitting down in front of a board game playing this game, whatever it might be, not necessarily Dungeons and Dragons, and then there'll be people watching. Like, you guys aren't part of the game. You're not the two players or four players sitting around this table playing this game right now. You're watching it from wherever you are in the world. It's a crazy, interesting phenomenon, and figured I'd bring it to your attention to just let you guys know, hey, not only can you play video games and create a community around that and have a great time, you know, sharing stories with each other and going on adventures and making friends, you can also do it in real life too with a board game. Super simple. Think about it sometime. You might be surprised. All right, moving on to some hardware gadget news. New Xbox and PlayStation hardware hint at the future of gaming 6 years late. If you guys only figured this out, both Sony and Microsoft are setting expectations for their future game consoles, revealing information this week about new hardware within 24 hours of each other. Sony revealed that its next-gen console, almost certainly called the PlayStation 5 at this point, but currently still unnamed, would be AMD-based, support high-end graphic features like ray tracing and 8K output, and switch to high-speed SSD storage. Microsoft followed up with the announcement of the Xbox One S, all-digital edition, a late-in-life addition to the Xbox line that finally ditches the optical drive. The next PlayStation and the next Xbox, the future model beyond that One S, are both expected next year. One reading of the tea leaves is that one or both may drop the long-standing optical disc drives and traditional platter hard drives for some combination of cloud streaming and download-only games. Interesting. As of right now, Sony's Mark Cerny tells Wired that the next-gen PlayStation will still be able to use physical media. That might mean optical discs, but it could also be some kind of removable flash drive or maybe optical disc only for playing older backward-compatible game discs. But there's a long time between now and the 2020 holiday season. If all of this sounds familiar, there are a couple reasons. Nearly every other consumer entertainment device long ago ditched optical drives and non-SSD storage, and cloud-based gaming is finally having its moment in the sun after years of false starts, thanks to Google's Stadia project, Microsoft's Project xCloud, NVIDIA's GeForce Now, and other streaming options. This also sounds a lot like the console revolution that I guess this author called for back in 2013, just before the launch of the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. in that, he actually wrote an article about it, or she, I'm not sure, let me double check. Wrote an article that said why Xbox One and PS4 may be the final generation of consoles. Even back then, media delivery was moving online and away from a physical product, so it seemed apparent at the time. Tea leaves, the writing was on the wall as far back as 2013. Guys, switch to digital. Stop making people buy physical copies of a disc that people can just down. How do you think you get your updates? We don't mail out CDs anymore, Blu-ray discs. We say, hey, updates online, downloaded. There you go. Goodness. So, there you go. You might have your hardware updates, and hopefully rumors prove to be true. We'll see. All I gotta say is it better be named a PlayStation 5, because if they skip one, and like in Doctor Who, I'm gonna be mad. I'm gonna, like, pop my top. Oh, that was a joke I was supposed to tell. I don't think anybody got it. Well, we're not even far enough along in numbering system for the PlayStation for it to be called, you know, different one. I was trying to make a joke for my wife's sake, but I guess that fell flat. Probably try another one. So, moving on to some more, well, gadgety app type news. Instagram is apparently looking to hide like counts in a leaked design prototype. It was just broken about 5 hours ago. I guess, what does it say here? We want your followers to focus on what you share, not on how many likes your posts get. Okay. I'll try to read the rest of this article. During this test, only the person who share a post will see the total number of likes it gets. That's how Instagram describes a seemingly small design change test with massive potential impact on users' well-being. Okay, if your well-being is based around the fact that your self-esteem is, you know, well, 500 people liked my post, and 300 people liked it the last time, and 200 people. I gotta make sure I like stuff that people like more. Like, you know, I say like more. Like, if that's seriously. Go outside and enjoy nature and hang out with people in real life, cause y'all's self worth ain't measured based on the likes in an app that you get on a phone that somebody could step on, or sit on, or lose down a sewer vent. Hiding like counts could reduce herd mentality where people just like what's already got tons of likes. It could reduce the sense of competition on Instagram since users won't compare their own counts with those of more popular friends or superstar creators. And it could encourage creators to post what feels most authentic rather than trying to rack up likes for everyone to see. So we have a couple examples here. Now, essentially, it just removes the like number. It just says liked by so-and-so name and others. Kind of interesting. And only you can see the total number of likes on your post. Interesting concept. The design change test was spotted by Jane Mengchen Wang, the prolific reverse engineering expert and frequent TechCrunch tipster who spotted tons of Instagram features before they're officially confirmed or launched. Wong discovered the design change test in Instagram's Android code and was able to generate the screenshots that you see in this video. Of course, if you're listening to the audio version, you're like, there's no video. Yeah, there is. Go to youtube.com/technewsgadget or facebook.com/technewsgadget to see the full video. You can see on the left that the Instagram feed post lacks a like count, but still shows a few faces and a name of other people who've liked it. Users are alerted that they'll only see their posts like counts and anyone else won't. Many users delete posts that don't immediately get enough likes or post to their fake Finstagram accounts if they don't think they'll be proud of the hearts they collected. Hiding like counts might get users posting more since they'll be less self-conscious. Interesting idea. And Instagram confirmed to TechCrunch that this design is an internal prototype that's not visible to the public yet. A spokesperson told us we're not testing this at the moment, but exploring ways to reduce pressure on Instagram is something we're always thinking about. Other features we reported on in the same phase, such as video calling, soundtracks or stories, and apps time well spent dashboard, all went on to receive official launches. So this could turn out to be something else as well, or not. What do you guys think for those of you who use Instagram? Is this an interesting feature that you'd find good, bad? Let me know down in the comments section. I'd kind of interested in hearing your thoughts. As for my thoughts on it, let's be brief. Seems interesting, and it could be helpful, or it could have the negative effect. We'll see how Instagram best bounces it out. Moving right along, because I'm noticing the time here, and I'm going, what the heck is going on? I'm only covering 7 stories. It doesn't seem that long, but apparently it is. Well, moving on to some gaming news, Overwatch players have already discovered secrets on the new Havana map. The latest update for the Overwatch PTR on April 18th introduced a new escort map, Havana, for players to test, and are already discovering secrets the location has in store. So obviously, if you guys like Overwatch, I play it from time to time. New map means new goodies. Because, I mean, you can only play so many maps for so long before you start getting annoyed at people saying, change your team comp. This is a defensive position. Why do you guys keep letting him push back that point? So, good. New map and, you know, at least more time to sort stuff out. The new map was previously exclusive to the Overwatch Storm Rising Archives Events PvE mission, but has now been unleashed to the PTR in preparation for its arrival to the live service. Since then, players have been scouring every inch of the Havana streets and structures, looking for anything ranging from bugs to exploits and even useful hidden items. So, here's a couple secrets. Although some would actually be pretty awesome to keep in the final version, others seem to in strange spots that make them seem like Easter eggs waiting to be found. A video by Redditor name EXEFailed shows that the escort map has a couple of health packs tucked away on some of the rocks positioned just beyond the Don Rumbotico distillery. There's one pack barely poking out of the divot in between the two stones, but after adjusting slightly towards the edge of the cliff, reveals another health pack peeking out from underneath the pile of rocks. And I think there's a video here. What is this? So it looks like we're by the cannons here, right by this rock. Oh, look, right in the rocks, there's a little health potion there. Yep. And I think there's another one that we were looking at. It's like a health potion. We're looking at another one, or are you just going to shoot each other and die? I'm not sure. What's going on? What are you guys doing? There's a video that's playing right now. Yeah. So he just goes over there and picks up a health pack. So there you go. So, a deeper look into the escort map reveals even more secrets. A separate video from ZZombie shows another health pack hidden deep inside the map. The player was even able to hack it with Sombra, unlike the two others found by the other player. There's, what, a health pack hidden somewhere? It's like a wall, like a hidden wall you could walk right through. Kind of interesting. The recent discoveries come just mere hours after Havana was added to the PTR, so there's no telling what players might find in the coming test weeks for the new locale. Between Havana's PTR debut and its integration to the main game, players can expect lots of changes and bug fixes to happen over time as the devs prep the map for primetime. What do you guys think, for those of you who play Overwatch? Interesting addition? Helpful place for a health pack to be or something else? Did you guys find something interesting? Let us know down in the comment section down below. Moving right along to our final article, Whispers of a Machine Review, a Nordic noir gone sci adventure that's surprisingly good. And I guess a Newsweek here gave this game a 9 out of 10. Jeez. Okay, well, it must have been pretty good. So we're just going to take a brief look at it and see what we think. Let's face it, the future is a strange place, full of unforeseen technologies, changing societies, and the consequences of actions by generations past. It's no wonder film and print are obsessed with it, but take the uncertainties of the future and shroud them in the bleak landscapes and morally complexities of the Nordic noir crime genre, and you end up with a surprisingly good premise for a video game. In Clifftop Games' latest offering, Whispers of a Machine, the developers have created the perfect mashup of these two seemingly unrelated genres, but a game features some really good storytelling with 4,000 lines of professionally voiced dialogue. It also introduces some unique elements to the classic point-and-click adventure genre that transform it into something greater than the sum of its parts. So, this is where I'm going to tease a little bit about it, and then you guys can read the rest of the article for yourselves. In the game, the players assume the role of Vera, a special agent for Sweden's Central Bureau. Vera has been sent to the small Nordic town of Norsund to investigate a string of violent murders. The story takes place in a post-apocalyptic future where AI technology has been banned. While museums and other cultural landmarks still feature relics of the past, such as farming robot displays, ever since, quote, the collapsed society has outlawed these kinds of technological advances. In Whispers of a Machine, people live a simpler, more primitive way of life. But this is where things get strange. Although smart technology has all been eradicated, special agents like Vera are an anomaly. And I can't spell anomaly. I can't even say it. Forget it. Indeed, all agents of the Central Bureau have been injected with a nanofluid called blue that gives them special augmentations. These augmentations give Vera access to superhuman abilities such as quick burst of strength, the ability to detect when a witness is lying, and more. Neither Vera nor the player are told why these augmentations have been approved for special agents or what their long-term consequences may be. This sets the stage for a massive existential crisis Vera will undergo as she begins unraveling the secrets behind these mysterious deaths. So, interesting. I'll have you guys look at it. If you're interested in pricing or where to find it or how to buy it, Whispers of a Machine is available now on PC and Mac and mobile. Players can purchase the PC version of the game on Steam for $15, and mobile players can find the game on the Apple app or Google Play Store for just $5. So, enjoy, have fun, and that wraps up the news for today. So, thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. The latest in tech news can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and Facebook Watch. If you enjoyed this episode, hey, be sure to let us know and double-check that you're subscribed and or following so that you don't miss the latest episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, visit TechNewsGadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys. I'll see you on the flip side.